This is your NPR radio station for the past 32 years, 91.3 KUAF. And this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, the 8th day of August, 2018. I'm Kyle Kellums. The annual Sensory Iconoclast Project at the Arts Center of the Ozarks hosts an arts reception tonight at the ACO in downtown Springdale. Every year, artists and chefs team up to combine their talents. This is the fifth year. And this year, the chefs created art while the artists are working in the kitchen. Tonight from 6 to 8 is the art reception at the ACO. Later this month, the 23rd, that's a Wednesday, the culinary part of the collaborations will be unveiled at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Much more information at acozarks.com. Ahead on today's Ozarks, the militant grammarian says, "We're getting back to the basics today." She discovered a slim grammar-only book that's inspired her to spend a few weeks focusing on the most fundamental rules of grammar. First, grammar is a cornerstone of education, and we begin today's show with another story of education in Northwest Arkansas. For decades, or maybe longer, unruly students were forced to stay after school, maybe standing at a blackboard chalking repetitive apologies. With the new school year, chronically disruptive students in the Bentonville School District will be assigned to behavior classrooms. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
A local public swimming pool filled with kids diving, pushing, splashing each other in the cool turquoise blue water this hot summer day will soon be empty. In just a few weeks, these rowdy youngsters will all be back in school, required to be still and pay attention to teacher. And if they don't, chronically disruptive or aggressive students in the Bentonville School District will be assigned to new behavior classrooms for remediation. Debbie Jones is Bentonville School District Superintendent.
It is for all students that display a very unique set of behaviors.
The behavior classrooms are designed primarily for the general student population, she says.
It's for students whose academic abilities are generally within or close to the grade level norms, but their behavioral needs are really focused over mental health issues, and so some of their behaviors can be very severe.
Last year, she says, certain students were being pulled from class due to disruptive behavior repeatedly.
And so when this would occur two or three times a day, we really had to question, is that the best educational environment for both the regular kids and for the student that displays these behaviors?
The behaviors Jones is referring to tend to be extreme.
When we talk about the extreme behaviors, we're talking about students who pose an imminent risk of serious bodily injury to himself or to others within the classroom. It's for students who have caused significant damage to the school environment. It's for a student who disrupts at least 50% of the classroom learning time. So they're really targeted, severe behaviors.
Last semester, with major disruptions increasing across the district, Jones says she contacted experts at Ozark Guidance, a behavioral health center in Springdale, for insight.
And I was just really puzzled. This was back probably January. And I asked, are you seeing within your own private practice, within your practice, an increase in these severe behaviors? And they said, yes, that they were. And I said, what do you attribute these to? And they said, well, really, we don't know for sure, but two factors that we do see increased mental behavioral issues. One is some of these students were students in prenatal whose moms were addicted to drugs. Number two, we see such an increase of addiction to screen time.
According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, kids ages 8 to 18 spend on average 7.5 hours per day in front of screens, half of that television watching. All that free time spent over smartphones, gaming, or gazing at TV, experts say, contribute to inordinate states of arousal, which result in states of agitated exhaustion and dopamine-driven craving for more screen time, which can result in disruptive behavior. Bentonville School District Superintendent Debbie Jones says any disruptive student in her district assigned to the new behavior classrooms will be formally assessed with full parental involvement.
Part of the process before a student is ever placed in the new behavior classrooms, a functional behavior assessment has been done. and a plan is put in place. And I can give you some pragmatic examples. Really great structure, really clear expectations, expected behaviors, modeling good behavior.
And allowing for plenty of cool down time, Joan says, will be critical. Each student will end up with individual behavior plans, and assignments to behavior classrooms will all be temporary. Joan says the behavior classrooms are unique, but modeled on standardized best behavior practices in education.
It wasn't really an attempt to start something new. The behavior classrooms were birthed out of a great need and desire to give all students the best environment, and that includes the students with these severe behavior problems.
Students with disabilities, like in every school, are mainstreamed with Bentonville School District's general population, but depending on the student, Joan says, they also may be subject to behavior classrooms. However, she says, any such move must be in close compliance with their individualized education plan as prescribed by the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Improvement Law.
For example, some students may suffer from autism, and they are very high-functioning. They work very well in the regular class. And then you'll see students that have very severe cases of autism who can be aggressive. And the proper placement is put in place for those students, which might be a very small classroom with a very well-trained teacher for that particular diagnosis.
Slightly more than 17,000 students are registered to attend Bentonville Public Schools this coming fall. 11% are students with disabilities, taught by a fleet of special education teachers and paraprofessionals. As such, the new behavior classrooms are intended more for the general education population.
They may be extremely high-performing students, but their behaviors are so severe when they come in. Our hope is that with this secondary placement for them, it's a placement where very, very small classroom. Generally, it's one certified teacher, up to two aides within that classroom, and generally six students or less. They could go to 10, but our hope is to keep them at six or less. And we remediate that behavior. We put some really strong behaviors in place, and then that student's allowed to progress to the regular classroom and be successful there.
And each behavior classroom will feature dedicated staff.
We will start two new classrooms. We have K1, and we have K2 and 3 through 3-4 next year. And we will hire one certified teacher for each of those, and we will hire two aides to support each of those. And we have also put on site a district behavioral specialist so that they're there to, and they work more with the teachers on strategies and working with students with severe behavioral issues.
The cost for the new behavior classrooms, including staff, is estimated to be around $225,000, which in the long run, Debbie Jones says, will save the district money and lost time dealing with chronically disruptive students. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Another week, another flurry of events in Washington. The biggest news might be the formation of a grand jury to continue the investigation into possible Russian interference in the 2016 presidential campaign. That and other matters caught the attention of John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics. They say there are Arkansas connections, past and current, to the various events in D.C. over the past 7 days. Their conversation began with the current investigation about possible Russian influence.
Well, yeah, I thought in the beginning that the central political investigation would extend to Flynn and Manafort, and then with that meeting with the Russian people, conceivably Donald Jr. or Kushner. But, you know, Whitewater was about a land deal in northern Arkansas that
failed land deal
that ended up not only being about sexual activity in the White House, but the totally unrelated poor governor of Arkansas, Jim Guy Tucker, and a bankrupt business deal in Texas, cable TV, I think. And so, once Once the investigation gets going, and once a special counsel reaches that point of other matters that may arise, and then has not one but two grand juries going, we're into something now.
Yeah. And Whitewater was also about obstruction of justice and perjury as well.
Of course, so, yes. It was.
But as Dale Bumper said, when they tell you it's about money, or not about money, it's about money. When they tell you it's not about sex, it's about sex.
It was about obstruction of justice and suborning of perjury and perjury having to do with a charge of sexual activity.
All right, last question on this because this relates. So yeah. Ken Starr, yeah. former independent counsel that yeah. did the Whitewater prosecution and case, comes out late last week or over the weekend and says, there should not be a fishing expedition here. You chuckle because what did he do for the better part of about 5 years there?
I'm amused because that'll be my Wednesday online column about Starr. Starr was on CNN, and he answered the question actually well. The question was that you have to abide by the charge that you're given when you're made a special counsel. And there's some open-endedness, he said, because it extends to other matters that may arise. That's what he said. But there need to be checks and balances, he said, because you don't want your investigators and prosecutors going out on fishing expeditions. That was the part that caused seismic screaming from Little Rock to Chappaqua, because he is generally believed by defenders of the Clintons and others to engaged in a fishing expedition. I think he was just slow and meticulous and plodding, taking seriously his job. And the real fishing expedition was by the Republicans who did away with the special counsel statute and switched to an independent counsel. And then the three judges in Washington, two of whom were Republican nominated, who fired Fisk and brought in Starr. It was a Republican fishing expedition. Yeah. I sort of have a nuanced view of Starr. I don't think he's quite the demon everybody said, but he is in no position. just as a matter of course, he is in no position to be saying we don't need any fishing. he showed something of a lack of self-awareness when he said that.
Congress is out on their August recess, and before they left, not only did you see John McCain with his health care speech saying we are co-equal branches of government here, you had them set up to limit Trump from making any type of recess appointments. Are we seeing a little bit of pushback here? Is the honeymoon kind of over where Republicans were going to say, he's getting his sea legs under him? Now I think my sense is that they're ready to push back in strategic areas.
Not afraid of him like they would have been mm-hmm. before. Actually, I think they still respect. Here's where I think we are. I think Republicans in Congress still respect and ought to respect the fact that this man has a 35% approval rating, because that 35%, when you apply it to a Republican primary that they might have back home, is something to be considered. I think what they're afraid of is leaving this guy home alone and risky business when they leave him home alone. If you want to talk about in terms
you got
of
two movie yeah, analogies,
well,
in
I knew what I was friend. Doing. I knew what I was doing, but they're thinking, you know, it's fine now. He's got 35%. We need to work with him as best we can. It's a manageable but tenuous relationship. But if he pulls some of these stunts of which his bluster would indicate he's capable, while they're gone on recess, if he were to fire Sessions and have a new attorney general and replace Sessions with a recess appointment that the Senate couldn't confirm, and then presume to get rid of Mueller, you go from 35 to the 20s, and you're not worried about the primary anymore. You're worried about the general election and losing to a Democrat. You would have what some would consider a constitutional crisis. So they still respect him where he is, but they want to stop him. They want to babysit him while they're gone, basically. They want him to stop. They want to stop him from exercising madness that seems possible. Same thing on health care. Lamar Alexander, some Republicans in the House, Asa Hutchinson in a meeting at the White House, they're all talking about trying to fix Obamacare in the short term and defer to a longer term, a regular order of business, any repeal and replacement. What they want is for him not to do what he does in his Twitter bluster, which is say he's going to stop these cost-sharing subsidies to health insurance companies for low-income persons, which takes those low-income persons off of health care because they can't afford the cost-sharing, and blows up premiums even more for everybody else, throws the health care system into chaos, in which Republicans, who can now say, all but four or five of them can now say, I voted to repeal and replace every time. It was two or three in our party who wouldn't go along, but I did. They can deal with that. But what they can't deal with is they didn't repeal and replace what then turns out to be broken and chaos. So they are trying to stop him. They're trying to preempt potential madness by this president.
Lastly, Tom Cotton appears with President Trump last week to roll out a legal immigration reform plan, a revision plan. Prediction, does it come anywhere near passage?
No, it doesn't. This was much like the West Virginia speech. Let's get out here and play to the base. Let's do something on immigration. And they brought out this extremist aide, Stephen Miller, to do some overheated rhetoric about it, the appeals to the...
John, you're showing your cosmopolitan bias now in referring to him that way.
I have one. And we should all aspire to not a cosmopolitan bias necessarily, but a cosmopolitan view, a worldview. We should all aspire to one, and we should not be disparaged when we do. This bill, I heard a Wall Street Journal has a cable TV show that I happened upon yesterday where... what's his name? Gigot, is that his name? And brings in some of his people, and they talk all this pro-business, conservative stuff. They despise this bill. This does nothing about illegal immigration. This is about legal immigration. One of them said, I have three adopted Chinese children. What do you think I think of this bill? And they were saying, this business tells me, they say, that what we need are more people to work. And that's a sign of a good economy. And this accomplishes nothing about the real problem. And that's from a business, pro-business Republican view. Somebody said on that show, what I started to say, I think Grassley, who's chairman of one of the committees that will consider it, may not even bring it up for a hearing. It will require 60 votes. They can't even get 50. It was just show.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. His columns, including a web-only column tomorrow, may also be found at ArkansasOnline.com. He talked with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. You can hear more from their conversation and read about other Arkansas-related news at TalkBusiness.net. And yet to come on today's Ozarks, how music and more will be the result of a new chorus in Northwest Arkansas.
It's both an artistic outlet, and it's also somewhat of a social justice outlet. So we're looking to, there are certain messages that we're hoping to send and participate with.
That's in about 5 minutes on today's show.
I'm Robin Young. The late John Saunders was one of the top sportscasters, but he struggled with terrible depression. And now his widow says she wanted his story told.
I hope that it helps somebody. I hope that people realize that you can't just suck it up, that you do need to get help.
Next time, here and now.
Today from 1 to 3 on 91.3.
Additional support provided by Skylark Advertising, offering promotional opportunities using a network of 42-inch indoor panels. This service benefits both the panel location and the advertiser with an exchange of images. Panels located in restaurants, corporations, schools, medical facilities, and more. Information at SkylarkAdvertising.com. The Fayetteville Farmers Market celebrates National Farmers Market Week through Sunday, honoring farmers in our nation's food system. The Fayetteville Market is open on the downtown Fayetteville Square Saturdays, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m., and Tuesday and Thursday from 7 a.m. until 1 p.m., with giveaways and other activities throughout the week. Know your farmer, know your food. Fayetteville Farmers Market.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums. The American Civil Liberties Union is once again challenging a law targeting panhandlers in Arkansas. A section of the loitering law passed earlier this year makes it illegal to, quote, linger on a sidewalk, to ask for anything as charity or a gift in a harassing or threatening manner. Bettina Brownstein, an attorney with the ACLU of Arkansas, says this violates the constitutional right to freedom of speech.
You cannot convict somebody of a crime for the reaction of a third party. How do I know if I ask you for money that you're going to take that as harassing or threatening or not? You just don't know.
U.S. District Judge Bill Wilson declared a similar law unconstitutional last year. Bans intended to limit panhandling have been overturned in cities throughout the country. The ACLU filed an injunction against the new law yesterday. Home sales in the Fort Smith metro area continue to increase in 2017. Talk Business and Politics reports the metro's home sales for July are up nearly 10% compared to July 2016. Over the first 7 months of the year, Sebastian County home sales are up almost 7.5% over the same period of time a year earlier. A new apartment complex in Bentonville is scheduled to be ready for occupancy in late 2018. The I Street apartment project will be constructed on land purchased by a Springfield, Missouri group last year for $1.79 million. One of the developers tells the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal ground should be broken next month at the site south of Highway 12 along Southwest I Street. The $25 million plan includes 238 new units. Arkansas Children's Northwest, scheduled to open in January, will need to hire about 250 new employees before the opening. The jobs are not just for nurses and medical professionals, hospital officials say, but also for food service, desk, and reception positions. The new campus will be in Springdale. Arkansas Children's Northwest will receive a donation this week from Springdale Mayor Doug Sprouse and the Springdale Mayor's Prayer Breakfast Committee. The presentation is scheduled to take place tomorrow afternoon, and the contribution stems from the mayor's prayer breakfast held in May, attended by more than 400 people. Arkansas Senator John Bozeman says efforts to reform the Affordable Care Act continue in Washington, D.C. He says the inability for the Senate to coalesce around a GOP-only written bill means it's time to take time and work across the political aisle to create changes for a national approach to health care.
I support going to committee. For lots of different reasons, you get a lot of discussion. The American public will understand better what's going on, the situation that we have. And then, too, you know, if somebody's got a good idea, I don't care if they're a Democrat or Republican, you know, let's get on with it.
We'll hear more from Senator Bozeman about health care reform, tax reform, and possible reactions to North Korea missile tests on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large. The senator says upcoming plans for tax reform will involve participation from senators from both major parties.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
A new ensemble is making its home in the region. The Northwest Arkansas Men's Chorus begins rehearsing next month in preparation for its inaugural concert in December. Last week, Artistic Director Ryan Fox and Managing Director Jeff Walker stopped by the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. Ryan says the project grew out of a chance meeting between himself and Jeff.
I was at a birthday party for a friend, and Jeff's partner, Evan, was at the party as well. And so I met Evan first, and we were all just sitting around a table talking, and Evan said, you know, hey, my partner wants to start a gay men's chorus. And my partner looked at Evan and said, Ryan's a choir director. And then that's where it all started. And Evan connected Jeff and I together.
Yeah, yeah. I actually started a men's chorus in Springfield, Missouri, and did that for about 3.5 years.
Is that where you're from?
That's the area that I'm from, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first shot at anything like that. I learned a lot about nonprofits. I learned a lot about creating a sense of community and kind of bringing the community together, using music to do it. I learned a lot through that process. And then when I came here, there really wasn't anything like that really across the state. So I was like, well, if I can do it in Missouri, I can do it here. And I know there's, if you're going to do it in an area of Arkansas, this is probably a good area to do it and start it out with. So what the heck?
So what's your background in music?
Jeff's background in music is not very much. Other than my mother was a praise and worship leader in a Pentecostal church, and I grew up kind of playing the piano back up for her, and then that was all by ear. I don't have a whole lot of training as far as college or anything like that goes. Just a love of music and a love of what a choir is capable of doing when they get together.
So did you sing in the choir too?
I do tend to sing in the choir, yeah.
Growing up, is that what you had to do as well when you weren't filling in for your mom?
It was a very small church. Okay. When we had a choir, which was usually just Christmas, I did get the chance to.
So how big was the choir, like five?
Nine, I think.
Okay.
Did your school have a choir?
My school had a choir, but I played the trombone in band. Okay. And then my school, it wasn't very big, and you didn't get to do everything you wanted to do. So
you picked one or the other.
You picked one or the other, and I picked band.
Okay.
Gotcha. And my background, I guess, is a little more extensive. Like a lot of people, Jeff, I started out as a kid taking piano lessons, singing at church, participating in band and choir at school. But I have 3 degrees in music, and I've been directing choirs either in schools or churches or both since about 2000.
And where are you directing now?
Rogers High School.
Did you sing as well, like in a choir or something growing up?
Oh, yes. And then all through college, you know, through my undergrad and graduate school, I was always singing. So
why did you decide to become a director?
Oh, you know, I don't really honestly know.
You don't get to sing as much as a director.
No, you don't. So, but and I actually prefer at this point in my life would rather direct than sing.
Why?
It's just where I feel like my better skill is. I enjoy the creativity that comes from that end of the spectrum.
I should mention that when, you know, I met him through someone else, like he shared, and when I requested his resume to update our initial website presence, I was like, oh, I had no idea his extensive background, his degrees, what was going on there. When I got that, I was like, oh, okay, we're gonna do this. Yeah, absolutely.
You just thought you found another passionate soul.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what are you guys looking for your Northwest Arkansas Men's Chorus?
Our mission is to build community and celebrate diversity through music. So that's ultimately what we're really looking for. An organization that celembrates the diversity available to us, and that engages the community in the community, builds a community in the choir, but engages the outside community with us as well. We're, you know, looking for a choir it's both an artistic outlet and it's also somewhat of a social justice outlet. So we're looking to, there are certain messages that we're hoping to send and participate with. And for our singers, we're, you know, we want to build you always want to build a quality product. But our first primary mission is community. So that's what we're really going for first and foremost, is a place where people can come together and be themselves through a performance medium that they enjoy. There are lots of people out there who are in choir in high school or college, and now there's really nothing for them to do. So we're just trying to engage all those aspects.
We've kind of identified that there's less there's some church choirs that are available, but there's less and less of that as we're seeing trends moving towards more more modern music approaches in the churches. So there's less church choir opportunities. And then if you maybe don't go to a church anymore, you have really none as an adult or very little. So those are going to be our initial people that we're going to welcome to our new choir. We've sort of set a goal for the first concert to have 40 singers, to make 40 singers. Currently, we're at about 25 that have agreed to sign on with us and perform for that concert. And so we've set a goal that we think is pretty aggressive for an initial choir of this nature in this area. But we also know that it's very attainable, and we're over halfway there already. So
will there be auditions or tryouts, or can people, or do people just sign up?
Yes and no, and sort of all the above.
Okay.
We're not going to have necessarily a formal audition process. Basically, we're going to use the first couple of weeks of rehearsal as a way to just informally assess people, and really the only musical requirement is just the ability to match pitch.
Okay.
Beyond that, if you can match pitch, you're in. If you know, we're not looking for the most beautiful voices, the most polished voices. We're not looking for people who are great music readers. I mean, we want those people as well.
Sure.
We want everyone.
But if I can't, that shouldn't stop me.
That should not stop you. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
We spent a lot of time thinking about this, talking about this, to make sure that we were all on the same page on who was our target membership and who do we want to be able to be a part of the group. And the answer is anybody in the community that wants to be a part of it. We, of course, are a men's chorus, but we're looking for anybody who identifies as male. So that's gay or straight. That's it could involve it could be transgender, identified as male. As long as you can match the tenor one, tenor two, baritone, bass, pitch level, you know, come talk to us. We'd love to have you join us.
And in keeping with that, as the artistic director, I'm more than willing to, if someone hasn't sung in a while and they're just not really sure what voice part they are. Am I a tenor? I used to be a tenor. Am I still a tenor? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I certainly will be happy to work, meet with those individuals one-on-one and just do a little assessment. And that way they find a place in the choir where they're most comfortable singing.
So how do you tackle organizing 40 voices? You know, my experience as a child, there'd be my first grade class, there's 20 of us. You put us with 20 kids from second grade to do the Christmas play, and we'd all sing, and it was cute, I guess. I don't know how it sounded to my poor parents, but with adults, I think you have a little more control. But how do you go about tackling making all those voices kind of blend together nicely?
Well, as you first hinted at, you know, adults are a little more focused than second graders. Not always a lot, but a little more. And so that helps. And, you know, there's both a physical and a psychological aspect to it. The physical, just part of the training I have, it just deals with how do you create blend in an ensemble. And that really comes down to taking the time to teach some vocal technique, to teach just some basic sound production concepts, things that you can teach just over a series of time, taking 5 or 10 minutes out of rehearsal. And that's what the rehearsal process then is all about, is just refining our sound, using the ear to listen to the people around you and ask that simple question, am I fitting in or sticking out? Mm-hmm. And things like that. But there's also then the psychological side. Choirs, people who want to be together, naturally their voices work better together. And when you create an environment that people come to do more than, they're there for more than just singing. They're there to interact with people. They like the people they interact with. They have some kind of bond with them. That translates also into this cohesion that translates into a cohesive sound.
In addition to singing and this being an outlet for local artists, you said part of the mission is to kind of tackle some social justice issues. How do you plan on doing that? Like, will you have somebody come give a lecture on something? Will you sing socially conscious songs? Like, what is your idea?
The idea that we're floating right now are socially conscious songs. You know, for example, different concerts and not every concert will necessarily have a hardcore social justice focus. But we might take a spring concert one year and focus on an issue that's important to us. And that could definitely involve a guest speaker that's woven into the concert. You know, we'll use a lot of visual media in projections, in part, choosing socially conscious songs that send a certain message. And it's just all through that, all the different ways you can project that message in the performance.
And a lot of that really has to do with not necessarily singing a social justice targeted song, mm-hmm. but maybe presenting a real common song or a song that you've heard in pop music or maybe in a movie in the last year, a soundtrack or something like that. And then presenting it in a way that gets you thinking about it in a different way, a different perspective on that. And like you said, pairing it with some visual media, maybe to do that same kind of a thing, just to spark a thought, maybe I haven't thought about all the angles or who's affected by these kinds of decisions or what's, you know, what are some underlying issues that maybe you haven't thought about before.
And another way, and this is Jeff's idea, so I'm kind of stealing his thunder, but finding an organization in town or in the area whose mission you want to help promote and pairing with them. So perhaps an organization that helps work with the homeless population. Mm-hmm. And pairing together in a concert to where you both receive benefit without putting money out. So, for example, we recognize them at our concert. We give them free ad space in our program. And then in some way, they recognize us on their end. And that's another way to really kind of deal with a social justice issue that's mutually beneficial, not just to us, but to someone else who's actually directly dealing with that every day.
Yeah, really just trying to think about all the different things that can come about when we set our mind to building community in the area.
And you're celebrating diversity. It's another thing that you mentioned, and obviously doing that by having a diverse cast of singers. But me as the audience, I may not know that, you know, you have gay, straight, transgender. Does that matter?
That's a good question. I think that you would figure it out just reading the program and all of that stuff. But I think that, you know, actually, as you mentioned, that's a good point. It's important that we make sure that that diversity is known.
Well, I think at the end of the day, we don't really, we want to celebrate the diversity, but we think that it'll be kind of
organic,
more organic in nature. Yeah, that's a good word.
So how do you think that might be helpful to an audience, or how might that benefit an audience, exposing them to maybe a population that they don't have a lot of contact with, or exposing them to a type of diversity that they're not familiar with? How is that?
Well, let me share a real quick story.
Sure.
First, because it partially answers that question. When I was involved and I first got the idea to form the chorus back in Missouri, I didn't have a speaking relationship with my mother, and we hadn't really talked and had a falling out maybe 5 years prior. I had came out as a younger gay man, and there wasn't really a relationship there. It had kind of fallen by the wayside. We're from a small town, and there was just not a whole lot of acceptance or understanding. You didn't really know of that many people, and who you did know of, you had certain predisposed concepts of who they were and what they would act like. And so my mom had preconceived notions of who I was as a gay man and who gay men were. And so when she came to the first concert that she came to, which was the group's third concert that they put on, I said, well, what did you think? Of course, I was really nervous. and I said, oh, gosh, what's she going to say? And she said, it was just a great concert. And I said, well, what did you think was going to happen? And she said, well, I thought there was going to be lots of flamboyancy, and there was going to be batons throwing, and there was going to be pride flags everywhere, and everybody was going to be sashaying around. And I said, well, I mean, we have songs where we do that when it's appropriate. But, you know, you're not going to sing a song in memorial of a fallen soldier and be sashaying a pride flag around either. And so I think that really speaks to answering that kind of question. You get to people that maybe don't realize that they're around people who are different than them every day. When they come and see a concert, it's just one more way for them to see we're really not that different. You know, we may express ourselves differently at different times, but that's everybody, and that we all have a sense of commonality. And that's what makes this so cool, is that we're using music as an avenue to do that with this particular group.
So if there's a gentleman that would like to get involved, what should they do?
They should visit our website, which is nwamenschorus.org. There's a contact sheet, and fill that out. It will come straight to us.
If you're a Facebooker, you can look us up on facebook.com/NWAMensChorus. You can look for the blue bow tie, which is kind of our signature little logo, and you'll know you've got the right place. And like us on there. We'll be following. We'll be reaching out to all of our followers on the Facebook page as well.
And we're advertising as far south as Fort Smith, and as far north as Joplin in Pittsburgh, Kansas. And then we're reaching out as far east as Harrison and Eureka Springs. We just know that because there is not a men's choir of this nature anywhere in Arkansas, we want to cast our net wide and give as many people an opportunity as possible.
Thank you, gentlemen, so much for coming in. And
sure.
Best of luck with the project. I look forward to seeing it come together.
Thanks for having us.
That was Ryan Fox and Jeff Walker with the Northwest Arkansas Men's Chorus. speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. The group will have a kickoff event from 5 to 7 Saturday evening at Maxine's Tap Room. The chorus will begin meeting September 11th at St. Thomas Episcopal Church in Springdale. And the first three rehearsals will be open rehearsals. More information is available at nwamenschorus.org. Tomorrow on Ozarks, Anita Paddock grew up in Van Buren, and she remembers a nine-month period almost 40 years ago when that city was on edge.
They didn't know what to do. They didn't know what to think. They just went to their yard, and they just stood around in little knots of people, some crying, and the men, you know, mad, and they just didn't know what was going on with this town and how could this happen.
We spend time with writer Anita Paddock at the Fort Smith Public Library discussing her new book, Closing Time, about an infamous crime in western Arkansas. That's tomorrow on Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3. And you can take us with you wherever you go as a free podcast so you never miss a story, interview, or musical performance by subscribing through services like iTunes and Stitcher.
Get on the Kellogg's old brand wagon.
On the next Fresh Air, the story of the Kellogg brothers who invented cornflakes and other breakfast cereals and ran the Battle Creek Sanitarium, which pioneered the concept of wellness. There's lots of surprises in the story relating to the Seventh-day Adventists, abstinence, and eugenics. Join us.
Fresh Air at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. every weekday on 91.3.
91.3 is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include American College of Radiology certified imaging departments, infusion centers, pharmacy, clinical trials, and more. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the region's daily newspaper, offers local news where we live, play, and work in Benton and Washington counties. It's one newspaper for one region. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, online at nwadg.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me at the Carver Center for Public Radio, our militant grammarian, Catherine Sherrilds. Welcome back.
Thanks, Kyle. Well, we named this segment the militant grammarian, right?
Yes, we did.
But we don't limit ourselves to pure grammar.
Well, pure grammar, no. It's about language and communication.
Whatever we feel like talking about.
Well, there is that as well.
Well, for the next few weeks, we're getting back to hardcore grammar. And it's primarily because of a little book that emerged one day when I was looking for something else in the piles of papers I call my files.
Well, we're going to put a photo of this on the Ozarks at Large webpage. It is a small book, and I love the cover. The cover is just sort of a minimalist, and it's called Advanced Grammar.
It's very, what, 60-ish kind of mod looking?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's called simply Advanced Grammar. It was published in 1980 by William Leahy, who, judging from a search of Amazon, has been publishing English grammar booklets for decades. In its 25 pages of grammar tips, it covers many of the topics we've covered before.
Uh-huh.
But for the next few weeks, we're going to talk about some that he covers in his booklet that we haven't addressed yet.
Okay.
At the top of the table of contents is the topic of subject-verb agreement. What does that mean, Kyle?
Subject-verb. They agree. So plural, singular.
So generally number. That's
right.
Generally the big problem.
Right.
Does the subject take a verb that is singular or plural? One of the most common problems is interference. We aren't likely to say the coach were despondent.
No.
That hurts
but
us,
I
right?
Know, now I'm figuring out what interference is going to mean.
But if the sentence read, the coach, along with the players, the cheerleaders, and the many fans who had spent the fall hoping for a string of victories.
Still, you're talking about the coach,
right.
Singular, despite that you have all those plural things
that's
set
right.
off by commas.
That's right, yeah. And still, only the coach is the subject of the sentence. Words coming between the subject and the predicate have no effect on the agreement of the subject and predicate.
Right.
Expressions such as accompanied by, together with, as well as, including, do not affect the number of the subject. I found that as well as quite useful in my own writing because sometimes you can throw an and in there. I heard on NPR them talking about the president's son-in-law and advisor. And I'm going, okay, are we talking about two people? Because there were a lot of people in that room, right? You know? Yeah. So are they talking about two people? Oh, no, no, they're just talking about one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So sometimes an expression like that can help make things clearer. Okay, so the problem occurs quite regularly also with prepositional phrases. I used to make my students memorize this mantra and repeat it to me in class. The object of the preposition can never be the subject of the sentence.
Right.
Because we're always wanting to look at that object.
Right. And say, 'cause it's closer.
It's closer, and it's quite often plural, it seems, with a singular subject.
And when I say closer, it's closer to the verb that you're going to be using.
Exactly.
Right.
And you know, a lot of grammatical rules talk about what's closest. You
right.
know, so it's an understandable mistake. So here's a sentence. One of the computers crashes whenever the air conditioner starts up. What's the subject? One of the computers. Mm-hmm. Not
one.
Computers, right?
Right.
Right.
And it's one of the computers, so it's one of the computers crashes.
Yes. And of is what kind of word?
Small.
And those small words are called anywhere a squirrel can go.
Is a tree? Anywhere a squirrel can
go. That's one place it can go. Preposition.
Oh, yeah,
sure.
Of course, yes.
So one of is preposition, right?
Right.
So computers is what?
The prepositional subject there, or object. Yes.
Object of the preposition,
yes.
Right. And as I said a minute ago, which I'm sure you memorized, the object of the preposition can never be the subject, okay?
Right.
All right.
Yes.
So it's obviously singular because one is singular, yes. Having been a militant grammarian for many, many years, I recall touring a local museum two or three decades ago and pointing out, you know, as I would, an error on a sign displayed next to an artifact. It was something like, the youngest of the tribal members are often at risk. So what's the subject?
Youngest.
Youngest, right. What should be the predicate? What should it say?
Youngest of the tribal members
is. Yes, because youngest is.
But you see where it happens, because it's next to members,
that's
which is
right.
plural, but that's not the subject.
That's exactly right. The members, the museum's exhibit manager did not agree with me.
Really?
She did not, arguing that because members was plural, the verb had to be plural.
Mm.
So I left her to her confusion. Leahy addressed another point of confusion people have when trying to be agreeable. The rule is, here and there are never subjects, never the subject of the sentence.
Okay.
Unless you had a sentence like, there is a difficult word.
Well,
you know,
right.
Okay. So compare these two sentences. There was a snake on the patio.
Mm-hmm.
There were several snakes on Samuel L. Jackson's plane.
Right.
So what's the subject of the first one? There was a snake on the patio.
Snake.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And then
it comes after the verb, but it's still the subject.
That's right. And because it's singular, you say
was.
There was.
Right.
And on the second one, snakes.
Is the subject.
And
plural.
It's plural. So you say there were. And we often start sentences, especially the contraction, there's many things I would like to do. No, there are. There are many things I'd like to. The predicate agrees with the subject following the predicate. Was comes before snake. Were comes before snakes. Many listeners have learned how to deal with these sentences the way I did. Turn them around.
Mm-hmm.
A snake was there on the patio.
Right.
Several snakes were there on the plane.
Yeah.
Ew, I'm getting on a plane in a few days.
Well, there won't be snakes, I promise you that. Our militant grammarian is Catherine Sherrills.
She said, I don't like spiders and snakes, and that ain't what it takes to love me. Like I wanna be loved by you.
Student sexual assault is usually discussed as a college problem, but it can happen much younger. In one Oakland middle school, boys made a game of trying to grab girls.
I remember a little twerp sixth grader with his like hand out and go, yes. And like, it is kind of funny, but then it's not.
Youth Radio looks at K-12 sexual assault this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 3 to 6 on 91.3.
Additional support provided by The New School, an independent school educating one-year-olds to high school. The school's faculty and student-centered learning environment focus on developing the whole child and preparing them for college and life. Details, including preview days and Whitaker scholarship information, available at 521-7037 or thenewschool.org.
And big congratulations to former Arkansas Razorback track and field star Omar McLeod. He captured his first World Championships title in the 110-meter hurdles last night at Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park in London at the World Championships. He also received a gold medal at the Olympics in Rio. A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Lincoln. Ozarks at Large, a production of 91.3 KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. We end today's show with the duo Ladies Night, recorded at the Carver Center for Public Radio. Dana Idlett and Meredith Kimbrough will play for free at George's Majestic Lounge Thursday night, beginning at 7. This is Ladies Night, performing Teeth of the Day. Thanks for spending time with us.
I am lost. Teeth of the day.